and welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with our organization. From students to staff members and alumni to volunteers, we know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story that led them there, and we want to know that story. Today's guest is a fellow staff member and actually the first person from CIS of Mid-America who I talked to as she did my interview way back in 2014. Kelly Stanford has held a few titles during her time with CIS of Mid-America and is currently our Chief Program Officer. I know a little bit about her past prior to working with us, but what I don't know is what initially got her involved with nonprofit work and what made her decide to join our team. Let's find out together as we welcome Kelly to the lunchroom. So hello and welcome to the lunchroom, Kelly. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Victoria. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So you're familiar with this podcast. We've worked together for years. You know what we are here to do. So we're just going to start at the beginning.
Okay.
Where did your journey with nonprofits first begin?
Well, my journey with the nonprofits began after a 14-year journey in public education. So if I can go back to that, because it's very much related for me. I started as a teacher in South Texas in the Corpus Christi, Texas area in 1992. Was my first year as a teacher, and I was hired to be the teacher at a what was known at the time in Texas as a multi-purpose alternative school. I taught all the social studies subjects for 7th through 12th grade, and so in teacher lingo, that means I had 7 or 8 subjects to prepare every day. I didn't have a ton of students, but the students were taking everything from, in Texas, you take a whole year of Texas history in the 7th grade, so everything from 7th grade Texas history, 8th grade U.S. history, government, economics, geography, high school U.S. history, you know, all of those subjects. And I had students taking, working in all those different subjects, and I was a first-year teacher. And so it was a pretty kind of trial by fire sort of experience. All teaching, first year teaching experiences are very challenging. This one was, I think, especially so. The students that I worked with that year were of really two basic groups of students. There were students who had dropped out of school for a variety of different life reasons, and had come back and wanted to graduate, and they really couldn't do that at the conventional high school at the time, just because the flexibility to meet their needs wasn't really available. And then the other group of students were students who, because of their behavioral choices, were no longer allowed at the conventional high school for disciplinary reasons. And so they had been assigned to attend the alternative school. And so that was the group of students that I worked with. I will tell you that I was newly married at the time, and I always say, luckily, I did not have any kids, because I did come home crying a couple of days a week after work, which, I don't know, you've known me in the last 5 years or so, that may be a surprising thing to hear from me.
It is. Yeah.
but at the time, it was a pretty emotionally challenging environment to be in as a first-year teacher, but tremendously rewarding. It really was very rewarding. But I will also confess that over the Christmas or the winter holidays that year, I went and got at Barnes & Noble back in the day, a gigantic What to Do with Your Liberal Arts Education Career Change book, because I was convinced I didn't know I could do this another year, because it was pretty rough. And so, but I stuck with it, and I went on to teach 7 more years in the classroom as a social studies teacher. 6 of them were in a different kind of alternative school that was much more enlightened, and it was voluntary. Students applied to go to school there. We went year round. We provided on-site daycare for parenting students. We provided small group supports through the counseling department on topics like parenting, like substance abuse, mental health issues, birth control and reproductive issues, relationship issues, that kind of thing. So it was pretty progressive, alternative setting. And I taught in that school for, I guess six or seven years, and then finished my last year teaching at what was kind of a traditional high school. And through the course of that experience, my heart and my early professional commitment really was with students who had a lot to overcome in order to try to get their education. That's who I kind of fell in love with working with as a teacher early on. And that's kind of where my heart has remained. I went on in education to get a master's degree in educational administration, to be an assistant principal at a middle school, and then go on to be a curriculum director and an assistant superintendent for curriculum instruction. But all the while, my focus was always on a commitment to the belief that I hold that all students should have access to quality education and to the best educational experiences possible, so that they have the chance to realize their potential. And that was really kind of the core beliefs that drove my professional life in education. But there came a point where I decided that if I wanted to keep helping the students that I had fallen in love with working with early on, I might need to do it from a different lane than K-12 education. And so that's what really motivated my interest in nonprofit work. And for me, that started with United Way. I saw United Way as an opportunity to support some of the other aspects of a student's life that really impact their ability to be in school and be successful and grow in their potential. And so I was attracted to the opportunity to work on some of the other issues that are always at play in every student and every young person's life. And I was the United Way director in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, for 5 years prior to moving to Kansas. And then we moved to Kansas, like a lot of people, because my spouse had a professional opportunity in Lawrence, Kansas, and I needed to get a job when I got here. And I was super fortunate that although I had never heard of communities and schools, even with the kind of background I had, I had never heard of it. And at that time, communities and schools needed a resource development manager. And I really thought this seems like a great opportunity to combine my passion and love for working with students who are facing a lot of obstacles to success with the experience I had gained in nonprofit management and fundraising and fund development with United Way into a new position with communities and schools. And so that's how I landed here.
Awesome. So that answers a question that I ask everybody is, when did you first hear of communities and schools? And so how long have you been working with us?
6.5 years. It'll be 7 years in August this
awesome.
Year.
Awesome. And during the intro, I mentioned that you have held quite a few titles, and I didn't know that your first title was a resource development manager.
Yes.
But now you are our chief program officer, which is really cool.
Yes.
So I think most people will be able to identify how your position at United Way impacts and influences the work that you're doing with communities and schools. But aside from the passion that you have, that you developed back whenever you were working in the school system, I'm curious how that position, specifically you as a teacher, and you can go ahead and expand that too as an administrator as well, how those positions influence and impact your work with CIS.
I think the thing that people will hear from me a lot when I talk about CIS is that all of us know teachers. We have them in our families. We have them as friends. And every teacher you know, if you were to talk to them about it, one of the age-old concerns that teachers have is that the students are at school 7 hours a day. But it's obvious to every teacher there is that I can do what I'm trying to do during the 7 hours of the day, but everything that is happening for that student and in that student's life outside of those 7 hours of the day are impacting what they can do in my classroom and what I'm able to do with them in terms of helping them grow their understanding about important concepts, grow their skills and ability that they're going to need to be prepared for whatever their wherever their interests take them after high school. And so that the desire to really be able to work on, you know, what's happening with students when they're not here, because that has everything to do with what they can do when they're in my room. It didn't matter as a teacher how hard I worked to develop the really engaging lesson plans and educational experiences. It becomes clear to you almost immediately that even though we were trained as teachers on how to develop instruction that is aligned to a curriculum, how to develop assessments that really are aligned to tell us how a student is understanding a set of concepts, we had all of that training. And so we put a lot of effort into what am I going to do as the teacher? What are the things I'm going to do today with the students or this week with the students? And then you get there in the classroom and you realize that if a student in my classroom was in pain, in physical pain, they were ill, they were hurting, if they were hungry, if they were anxious because they might not know where they were going to be staying that night when they, you know, when they got home from school, they may be frightened about things in their life. All of that was going to supersede my beautiful lesson plan and my well-crafted learning experience that I had put so much of myself into. And it becomes obvious that for students to learn, we have to pay attention to all the other parts of their life. These days we talk a lot about social emotional learning, and I'm thrilled that it is getting the kind of focus that has made sense to a lot of people in education for a long time, and that I think it really deserves, because the best teacher on the planet doesn't have a prayer of really helping students progress if students are coming to their classrooms not in a social, emotional, and physical condition to really be able to focus and you know, pay attention and be part of that experience. And so as a teacher, that's the connection to me. I'm always saying that for me, Communities in Schools is a let teachers teach model, because it is the thing that if Communities in Schools is in place, we can be a partner that can help try to address all of the things that don't have to do with math instruction, with science concepts, with the expertise that teachers build and have and hone over time. Communities in Schools can take on the challenge of helping students with a lot of the other things, so that when they are in the classroom, then that there's an opportunity for that really transformational thing to happen for a student, where their brain can get, you know, kind of set on fire by a concept, by an experience that a teacher has worked so hard to design and to provide and engage a student to learn and grow.
Yeah, I think that's really important that we talk about that piece of Communities in Schools, because a lot of what we say as people who represent this organization is really focused on the support that we provide for the students. But I think it's also really important that we talk about the support that we're providing for the teachers by helping these students be more prepared to learn and to be respectful and engaged in the lessons. And then sort of a side thing that we do at almost every school is by working with local community partners to bring in donations of supplies that students use, because a lot of teachers will end up spending money out of their own pockets to pay for supplies. And if we can help alleviate that burden from teachers while also providing this much needed support for students, well, that's just a win-win scenario.
Yeah, I think it's a key piece. I mean, teachers there's too much on their plates. And really, Communities in Schools is an organization that can help. To me, it's kind of like an ecosystem. We are helping the students, but by helping the students, we are also making it so that the teachers have a chance to really be able to have their greatest impact. And so the things don't happen in isolation. They operate, in my mind, like an ecosystem. And, you know, and I think if any of us are honest, if we look ourselves in the mirror as adults, if we are in pain or there's something going on in our life that has our anxiety levels through the roof, what is our ability to show up to our job and pay attention and give it everything we've got and really produce and engage? If we're honest, it's pretty limited. And so treating young people as if the things that happen in their life don't have an impact on their ability to pay attention in school and to take advantage of school is, you know, has always really been, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's short-sighted and it's kind of ignoring the reality of the situation. So I feel like communities and schools, we support students and we support teachers. And because those things are interrelated, it's that kind of whole system support that we can provide that creates the opportunity for there to be a learning environment where individual students have the chance to really, you know, experience some excitement about the topics and the concepts that really speak to them, start to understand what their skills and abilities are, and really have a chance for education to be the kind of experience it should be.
Mm-hmm. And that ripple effect, it even goes even further. As both you and I know, you know, we are also providing supports that help the families. So the families of those students, and then these students, as they graduate college or high school, and they go off into the communities, either to go into trade school or college or work, we're hopefully, you know, improving communities as well.
We definitely
are. So
it's
a really amazing ripple effect that, you know, that we just start at the beginning and then it just sort of spans out, and it's awesome.
Yeah, these, you know, the challenges that people have don't happen in a vacuum or in isolation, and the gains and the accomplishments that individuals have don't happen in isolation either. And so we will all benefit if we are able to help students who have what may seem like insurmountable challenges, help them build their strength and their tool set and their ability to handle the things that are going on in their life so that they can get the education that they need and deserve, so that they can then, you know, become part of the broader community. It really is an interdependent relationship and dynamic that benefits all of us in the long run. And trying to isolate or separate out different parts of it, to me, is short-sighted and doesn't have a lot of potential impact for success.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of success, I think it's the reason why we do have success in our organization and why we can see the impact that we're making on these students' lives is because we refuse to be isolated. You know, we must be interconnected with all of these different pieces, and that's the backbone of the agency.
Yes. Yeah, very definitely. That, you know, when people ask me, when we go into new schools, and I often will get the question from school district partners or sometimes from funders or other community partners that are engaged with us, what does it take for CIS to be successful in a school? And what I will always tell them is that we will do, you know, good things will happen for kids in any school where there is a CIS site coordinator. There's no doubt about that. But what it takes for CIS to realize the potential impact that our model holds is for the school, the leadership of the school, the principal, the teacher leaders, the school staff to be fully engaged and a full partner with us and help us become very integrated into what their strategic goals are for their school. When we have that kind of alignment and that kind of engaged partnership, that's when the communities and schools model has the potential to really have transformational impact on a school and in the lives of students.
Mm-hmm. I think Richard Profitz, he spoke of the same thing in an early episode that we recorded. I believe it was episode 3. And he's a superintendent of a school district that we are in. And he said the same thing. You know, the more support that the district and the schools can give to our program and to the site coordinator, the more successful that program will be, which is, it's the truth.
Yes.
So I've got a question for you as we kind of wrap up this first part of this episode. And that question is, looking back on your last 6.5 to 7 years with our agency, what are some of your favorite memories or success stories regarding the work that we do?
Well, my kind of hands down, my favorite success story has to do with a young man named Alex from Southeast Kansas. I had the great privilege and just joy of having Alex with me in Washington, D.C. at a gathering that our national office had pulled together. And part of that gathering was to go to Capitol Hill and to visit the offices of our congressmen and senators to talk about communities and schools and what communities and schools is and the work we do. And we had Alex as a student who had just graduated high school coming to talk about the impact that communities and schools had had on his life. And watching Alex start the day, he's like, at the first visit, he said to me, "Can I pull out my piece of paper and read?" And I wrote something, "Can I pull it?" I said, "Sure, you know, whatever you need to do to, don't be nervous. This is a little different. We don't do this kind of thing every day, but you're going to be great. You know, so yes, if you need to pull out what you've written, you know, that's perfectly fine." First meeting, he did that. He talked about his site coordinator and about the impact she had had in his life. And then he and I, we hauled ourselves back and forth across the Capitol from the House to the Senate and back again for the better part of a day making these meetings. And every meeting we went to, he was more and more comfortable each time. And then I had, we had like 6 hours before our planes left to come back to Kansas. And he hadn't seen anything in Washington, D.C. And we had the goal, he and I, of getting him to be able to see as much as he could see in the, you know, few hours that we had before we had to get on a plane. So I changed my shoes to something that could walk without, you know, too much pain. And we took off and we headed down the hill in Washington, D.C. and with the goal of hitting as many monuments as we could in the time that we had left. And so I got to spend that afternoon with that young man and learn more about his goals for the future and what he was hoping to do after high school. And he was just such a joy to be around and so excited about what his life, what, you know, held for him. And, you know, so open about the role that community schools had played in helping him overcome some challenges he was having in high school and helping him support him through his graduation. And, you know, having been a teacher, there are kids that that you'll never forget. And every teacher knows this and can tell you. And, you know, for me, some of those kids that I'll never forget were from that first year of teaching. Well, those people are, you know, that was a while ago. So those, in my mind, they're teenagers. They're not. They're in their 40s now or something, right?
Oh, my gosh.
You know, because 1992 was a long time ago, Victoria. So
that's true.
You know, so but I will never forget them. And I will never forget Alex because I have not met a person ever that was more open, more warm, more excited about, you know, about who he is and his future and more just willing to experience and engage people and talk about, you know, what he had struggled with and how he overcame some of those struggles and where he felt like he was going in his future. And so he is another young person that will live with me forever.
So something that you said, it kind of went ding in my head. And that was the impact that Alex had on you and the impact that your students had on you whenever you were teaching. Yes. And we talked earlier about the impact that communities and schools has on teachers, on families, on students, on the community. But the truth is that it's twofold. Like it goes back and forth. And we are impacted by the challenges and also by the successes that our students have. And that's one of the things that I really like that we do in our agency is we tell the stories of our students and the reality of the challenges that they've had come up in their lives and how they have worked so hard to overcome them. And then when they go on and they have successes, we share those stories too. And I think it's really important for everybody to know that. It just adds some pieces of reality that are essential in this world.
Yeah. And I think to me that one of the most important things that I always want young people to understand is how much we as a culture and as a community, a society and a community, how much we need them. We need them. We need them to spend time developing their skills and abilities, and then to be willing to engage and bring it back to the community where they settle, and to be part of handling the challenges that human beings are always having to handle. We need them. It, you know, without them, you know, we, the older generations and the younger generations that come behind them, we're in trouble if we don't have their help. And they have an important role to play with us and as part of the efforts in the communities where they live. They are needed. They're required for us to be a success as a society, as local communities, as a nation. We need our young people to really take their place, to realize what their gifts and what their talents can bring to the effort, and it's critical that they understand how much they're needed.
And that it's worth the challenges. It's worth overcoming those challenges anyways. And if they need help, we're here to help.
Exactly.
So with that, I think we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with a second serving of Letters from the Lunchroom. Stay tuned. Welcome back. As part of our show, we ask each guest to write a letter to the students that Communities and Schools serves. The only guideline they are given is that it must come from the heart. We also warn them that they will be asked to read the letter aloud during the podcast. Kelly, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Please go ahead.
Okay. Dear CIS students, I want to talk to you about Marvel, DC, and Star Wars. These kinds of stories have been popular with humans since the very beginning. They have some common things that really speak to all of us, no matter who we are, where we come from, and where we are now. A battle between good and evil, a main character who has a task that seems impossible, they at first don't believe they can do, helpers, friends, teachers, sidekicks, and many challenges along the way to defeating evil and accomplishing their big task. Throughout the story, it becomes clear that the most important thing is how they grow and change. Realizing who they are, valuing their strengths and talents, and believing they can take on the challenges they face and create a better future for themselves and others. They realize that they have the power to change their life and to make the world better. They realize the world needs them. People love these stories because they are really about what it means to be human. So, why am I talking to you about superhero stories? Because when I think about you and all of us at CIS, this is what comes to mind. I truly believe that each one of you is like a superhero who is just starting their journey, maybe not really comfortable with their powers and abilities or confident in what they can do, faced with challenges big and small at every turn. Sometimes it seems like it would be easier to give up, but they don't. They don't because they know other people need them to keep trying. Over time, they understand themselves better, understand how to use their powers and talents. They start to believe they can build a better future for themselves and for others. This is how I see you. This is who I believe you all are. Those of us at CIS are your loyal helpers along the way. Like Yoda for Luke Skywalker, Tony Stark for Spider-Man, Shuri for Black Panther, and the Amazons for Wonder Woman, we are here to help you on your journey, to help you with the tools and equipment you need to overcome challenges and win battles. Help you recognize and value the talents and abilities you have. Help you see how much you are needed by others, and most of all, believe in you and help you believe in yourself and your power to build your life and impact your world. With everlasting hope, Kelly Stanford.
Well, thank you, Kelly. That was so appropriate for the first part of this episode. So I think you're the first person who's really taken a theme to their letter. And I'm really curious, what made you go that route?
You know, I was just thinking about what does it all mean to me? You know, I've spent more than 25 years committed to working with students who have a lot of challenges to overcome, and when asked to write a letter speaking to them, what do I want them to know? And the idea that's really who they are to me. They are like young superheroes, because I think every one of us holds within ourselves a set of talents and, you know, superpowers, if you will, that we don't always necessarily recognize, but they're there. And if we can get support and we can get some help in overcoming some obstacles while we learn and grow, then I think the potential is unlimited. And it just kind of came to me that's, you know, that's the story to me of what our CIS students are doing, what all young people are doing, and that our role as communities and schools really is kind of to be that, you know, whether it's the expert who helps them with gadgets, that tools they need to do whatever the quest or the battle that they're going to go into that they might need, whether it's a mentoring kind of role or a teaching and supporting role, CIS site coordinators and teachers and other people in their lives, I think, are really filling those roles. And I think that's why those stories speak to human beings, because it's just a universal human experience. And kind of in a nutshell, that's how I see the relationship between communities and schools and the students that we are committed to helping.
And, you know, I'm really hoping that people who are listening to this podcast, that the next time they watch a superhero movie, that they'll look at it a little bit differently, because I know I will. I know that a lot of us, when we go in and we watch those films, we kind of know, like, you know, we know who the good guy is, we know who the bad guy is, and the good guy, at least at first glance, is somebody who's not necessarily somebody that I personally would think I could relate to, because they have these really crazy superpowers. But in all of those movies, just like you were talking about, we see how they got to where they are. And at the beginning, they were just like us. And they just had somebody that could coach them and believe in them. And with that, they were able to continue to grow. And anytime they have a hardship, because there's always a hardship, there's always a challenge, a barrier in those movies,
right.
They work with people and they overcome it. And it's so awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, what is there some saying that there are really only a handful of stories that human beings keep telling over and over again? And this is one of them. And I think it's because it is with a different lens or in a different setting, it is the experience that we all have within us to be faced with challenges, to maybe think we have some skills and abilities that could really be useful, but maybe we're not sure how to use them, or we're not confident in our ability to do it. And then we need people to help us, whether those are friends or mentors or teachers or, you know, scientists who can create gadgets and tools for, and we need help. And through that help, you know, we can overcome barriers. And I think it would benefit all of us to see ourselves, you know, I mean, it sounds cliched, you know, and a little cheesy, but to the superhero in all of us, you know, I'm just here to say, I believe that that's a real thing.
Yeah, me too. I can see it right now. I feel a little bit cooler as a human being, but also a little bit cooler as somebody who works on the CIS side as well, because I feel like I get to be both Yoda and Luke.
Yes.
And it's just, it's so cool. So I love that. Thank you. Thank you for taking, you know, the initiative and doing the theme on it. That was really neat.
Oh, that was fun. I appreciate the opportunity to do it, Victoria.
Awesome. So we're going to take another quick break, and then we will be back with the final portion of this episode. So stay tuned. And we are back. Okay, Kelly, are you ready for some extra credit questions?
I'm ready.
Okay, your first question. What is your favorite song to sing on the radio?
I'm in a little bit of a Jonas Brothers revival, I'm going to admit. So,
really?
Yeah, I totally am. So I like Cool is my favorite one, but Sucker for You is also a lot of fun. So at these days, if those songs come on the radio, I'm very excited. And I'm not ashamed to admit, you know, that I love me some Jonas Brothers. I'll admit it.
Nice. Yeah. Own that. I mean, I think they're, I've heard of them. So obviously lots of other people have too. I just personally have not listened to them.
Well, but, you're missing out. I'm just
Sucker for You. I have heard that because that sounds very familiar.
Yes.
So, and I've got a song playing in my head now, so I'm pretty sure I've heard that song. Yeah. And it's good. Not going to lie. It's good.
It's catchy for sure. I mean, it is what it is, but it's catchy.
It is. So this one will be really interesting. This next question, based on the letter that you wrote.
Okay.
If you could pick a superpower to have, what would you choose and why?
This is always a hard question. Because, it's really hard. You know, there are a lot of options. It's not like I'm not a person who goes, oh, without a doubt, this is the one. Mm-hmm. So I sort of have to go with how am I feeling at the time. I guess I'm going to say like mind control, like the ability to move things with my mind.
Oh, telekinesis?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay. What would you do with that? Or why would you want that?
I just think it would be, you know, like in terms of useful. I mean, it'd be cool to fly, you know, or be super strong or whatever. But I think that the ability to just be able to, you know, make things happen with just my thoughts, that seems to be really like it could come in handy. So
absolutely.
That's what I'm going to go with.
I know that if I myself had that, because I foster cats. And so, you know, there's like a 70% chance that anytime you were to find me at my home, there's a cat on my lap.
Uh-huh.
And so if I was telekinetic, I would 100% use that power to like refill my coffee mug so I don't have to move this cat or, you know, like get the remote control that's just a little bit out of reach because I don't want to move the sleeping kitty.
Right. So see, it's a superpower that has a wide range of utility from the very small comfort focused things you could do with it to really big, you know, things that you could prevent or rescues you could make, that kind of thing. So that's why I'm saying it's pretty
you
useful.
You mean besides just not waking a sleeping cat, like maybe like, I don't know, like moving like a car that's falling off a cliff.
Stopping. Like you know, something like that. See, so, you know, if you can fly or you're super strong, that's useful, but it's maybe not as useful in the small things that you might want to use it to do. Whereas telekinesis is, yeah. I'm going to put it up there as perhaps the most among the most useful.
Yeah.
Superpowers.
I agree with you because I definitely was like, well, how would I use it? And of course I went to like cats and coffee, but the truth is there's a lot of things you could do. I mean, because theoretically, couldn't you also like stop an avalanche?
Sure. I think you could.
I mean, like potentially possibly even like affect some sort of like weather-ish stuff. If you could, you know, move clouds.
Right.
Wow. We might be even giving some people some ideas for new movies. Who knows?
Right.
Okay. So your final extra credit question is, what is the number one reason why you feel that people should get involved with communities and schools?
I think, you know, I believe very strongly that people should get involved with communities and schools because we are there to make a difference, not just for the students we serve, but as you pointed out earlier, for the whole community. And it provides a unique opportunity for people to be part of creating an environment where students have the chance to recognize their potential, to realize their potential, and that is you know, changes their lives, and it has the potential to change the lives of everyone that they are you know, involved with and everyone that is around them. So being involved with communities and schools, almost like telekinesis, it gives you a wide range of opportunities to really be connected to what can happen in the future for individual young people and for your community as well.
Well, look at that. You wrapped it all up in a nice little bow. I love it.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks, Victoria.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. For more information on communities and schools of Mid-America, please check out our website at cismidamerica.org. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast, leave us a rating, and follow us on social media at CIS Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge, and until next time, class is dismissed.